You're listening to Rumor Mill News Radio. This is Raylan, and my guests are James Martinez and Bob Neverett. If you were listening last Friday, you heard them talking, and they have brought another guest with them, a guest named Ion. Bob was talking about Ion last week, and James, I think that I'm going to let you be the interviewer today. How's that sound?
Oh, no. Okay, I'm stuck. But you know what?
What?
I think because this is a unique situation on the radio, it's to your network and so forth, I'd be happy to ask questions, but feel free to step in, too, because it's better, much better in the form of a discussion. But,
well, James, first of all, let's remind the audience who you are, because you've got such an incredible background. I mean, you've been in Hollywood, you've got a radio show, I think you were into finances, and now you're helping people with their credit card debts. And so let's just establish who you are first, and then I'm going to let you introduce Bob, and I'm going to let Bob introduce Ion.
Okay.
How's that sound?
All right, the perfect daisy chain. Okay. I'm James Martinez. I'm the host of a show on the Achieve Radio Network called The Cash Flow Show. I originally started on the radio about 3 years ago. It was not my original idea to go on the radio, but another broadcaster said, you know, you know plenty about what the banks are doing, especially the credit card companies, and how that whole thing works behind the scenes, which is valuable information. So what I was doing is I decided, okay, I'm going to get on the radio and I'm going to start this particular broadcast. But prior to me even coming on the radio for about 7 or 8 years prior to that, I was working with Walter Boert, who wrote the book Operation Mind Control. And during that time, much of what I was discussing with him is trying to use behavior modification for something great, for something positive, something that would liberate the human race in a certain form. And after lengthy discussions with him about exactly what's going on behind the scenes, one of my interests was dealing with what I felt was the credit card abuses against the entire world, really. And I slowly started to look at the mechanism of behavior as associated with credit cards, and how people go into this alleged debt situation, how it enslaves them, and how they become complacent with the fact that they can have $5, $6, $7, $10, $15, $20, $100,000 of alleged debt for years and years and years, while maintaining a family, while having a career, and while trying to move forward in life. So during that time, when I was working with Walter Boert, we were looking at everything from hypnosis to NLP. He introduced me to the concepts regarding Marshall McLuhan, which is where we're at today. And prior to his death, he knew that I was going to go on the radio. He knew that he was around while that happened. We discussed very seriously some of our goals that both of us had in terms of being able to utilize the media to kind of liberate humanity. And my thing was always the money. I felt that the money was the driving force of certain powers that be to enslave people to a certain degree. So what I did is, in the very beginning, I was working in Hollywood as a casting director. I knew lots of producers, talent. A lot of people are on TV now that are good friends of mine. It was a bunch of creatives that were behind the scenes that started to dispute the actual contract of a credit card. Now, in the beginning, I was sitting back observing this, as was Walter, and I started to see all the data coming in from all the credit card companies as to what happens when you dispute a credit card for the alleged amount of the so-called amount of the debt. And we started to discover that there was a legal process we could follow to get people out of that situation. And it was based upon the currency and how it's structured and how the laws are structured today. So I told him when I was with Walter, this is prior to his death, that I wanted to take this concept of the credit card, and I wanted to be able to free not only their financial lives, but also their minds to a certain extent, and their neuroassociation between what's valuable, what's wealth, and what it is to spend actual money, and kind of recalibrate an individual from the inside out. Now, what happened was, while this was happening, I started way in the beginning. Walter passed away from colon cancer, and we discussed the goals and so forth of what I wanted to do when he wasn't around. And one of the people that he introduced me to that was instrumental during my research and learning what was going on, because I was compiling lots of data about what the courts do, what the bankers do, what collection agencies do, what people do in reaction to these entities when they come after them. And I remember it was I was sitting down with Walter Boert, and he was writing he was actually finishing a special edition of Operation Mind Control. He had three special editions, he was finishing the third one. And we were, you know, we'd always be kind of a friendly banter and debate. And he said, you know, you really need to talk to this guy, Bob. I'm like, well, who's Bob? And because when you get in a fixed position of something that you believe, your identity and your ego gets wrapped up into, you get in these little reality boxes that are, in my opinion, very stuck. And that's part of the problem, is when you don't have behavioral flexibility, it's difficult to understand things and learn and evolve. So I was stuck in a box, and he said, you need to talk to this guy, Bob. And he gave me the number, and I called him up, and he was very friendly, and I knew that Walter referred me to Bob Neverett many years ago. And I kept in touch with him back and forth, and I was calling back and forth. And he was mentioning some of the things that Marshall McLuhan spoke about electrical conditions and what it does to behavior and vice versa and how you interact with it. And at that point, I was completely like, who is this guy? And why don't I understand anything that he's talking about? So that was a long time ago. So
well, that's right where I am today.
Yeah.
And so that's why you're conducting the interview today.
Right, okay. So what I'll do is kind of intro to where we've come. What I did is, when I started this radio show, I wanted Bob to be involved on a certain level, because I knew when people exchange information with him, especially having to do with finance right now, because of the pressure cooker, everybody's listening a lot closer than they were. I think many years ago, if we weren't in the global financial situation that we are now, people would not have listened as closely. But now they are, and I get emails from all over the world I've had Bob Neverett on every Wednesday doing a State of Union address, as well as kind of an international press conference on the current situation of the economy, as well as new technologies that will affect the overall economics fluctuations, ups and downs, and trends and cultures for the entire world. So what has happened is the show has been a huge success, in so much that Bob and his team had the foresight and the knowledge to be able to see way far in advance what was going on with the global economy, and mostly the digital environment, and what the digital environment means to humanity, and as how we exchange information back and forth, and what that does, and that what that effect does. He was great at explaining that. And during this time, what he had done is predicted Cold Fusion would be coming out, not only on my particular network and show, but he predicted it publicly quite some time ago, way before he ever met me. However, what had occurred is, during that time, we've been quite public about demonstrating and asking the public to get acquainted with this concept of Cold Fusion. And then, lo and behold, last week, 60 Minutes declared that it existed and that this was a viable solution. It was now proven. Fleischman was vindicated of kind of the disastrous career effects that took place when he initially came out and said this thing is real. So Bob predicted it. We did it on my broadcast. It came true. I got a lot of feedback afterward and phone calls regarding that. And then all of a sudden, this week, I get forwarded an email indicating that 60 Minutes in the scientific overview study, people that kind of govern the scientific minds of the America, at least, said, well, wait a minute, this may not be true, and we're going to retract some of the things we're saying. So that is where we stood now. Now, however, another situation has come into hand that is interesting, and that is, as Bob is always kind of ahead of everybody else, One of the things that he has brought forth is new technologies, not only cold fusion, because he's kind of in charge of bringing that to the world in certain places, but also new technologies as in terms of consciousness. Now, what I'm going to do is probably better than me introducing ION would be Bob to introduce ION, because he actually is part of his team and actually interacts with them all the time. Now, what I'm going to do is suggest that everybody kind of suspend judgment, open their mind, and then I'll let Bob take it away from here as far as introducing ION. Go ahead.
Hey, Raylan. Great to be back.
Hi, Bob. Good to have you back on the air again. We've got about 5 minutes before we go to our first break.
Okay. I want to say I also predicted on James' show that the United States will be the last to get cold fusion, and that process kicked in this week with them, the scientific overlords, saying, nope, it's not real, and you're not going to get it. We'll have to work on it
okay.
a little more.
Bob, I'm not sure if anybody can hear you, because I can barely hear you. I'm asking the radio station to boost your volume, and I don't know if you're speaking into the phone, but that would help.
Yeah, okay. His volume is real low. It's low from my end as well.
Okay, how is this?
It's better. I'm hoping the radio station will boost your volume, though, because that's what really needs to happen.
Okay, I'm going to go to another part of the place here.
Oh, okay.
So how is this when I'm over here?
That's great. Yes, I can hear you fine now.
Okay, so maybe that's the reason. All right, I start off saying... one of the other predictions I made on James' show was that the United States will be the last to get cold fusion. And we saw this week that the scientific overlords, scientific establishment, the general national policymakers say that this cold fusion announcement by 60 Minutes is not totally accurate, and we're going to have to wait a while before they solve the issue of whether there is cold fusion. So that's an indication of why the United States will be the last to get cold fusion. So that's I just want to put that on the record. What do you want to know about Rayon before we go to ION? Rayon.
Well, why don't you, Bob, tell how that came to be?
All right. The person who channels ION is known as JW, and I've known him for a few years. And he started having some psychic experiences earlier this year. It was interesting. He started being able to look through his window at home and see other worlds. And he found that odd, because he wasn't inclined to create this kind of behavior consciously. And so we discussed that. And I came up with a theory based on some of the characteristics his thinking has, that his brain released him into that. So I came up with a chemical theory, just to see what would happen. Chemistry reason why he could project into other dimensions through his mind. It's not that I didn't believe astral projection, but in light of some of his other abilities, natural abilities, I thought, well, maybe this could be a good theory. He liked that, but he then confided to me, well, there's a new aspect. There's all these dead people sitting around me in my home. And he described them. I remember one person was an old man of the 40s in suave Hollywood clothing of the 40s, sort of like a lounge lizard kind of guy in a men's club. That's the image he came to me. And he said, and JW said that person can talk to him, that ghost, whenever JW engages him. And there were many others. Now, I had worked with a channel, Michael Blake Reed, who Raylan has heard of, Michael Blake Reed, who channeled 6,500 to 7,000 entities called the Evergreens. So that stopped after 30 years in 2004. So I've been wondering if I'd ever get a chance to have access to the Evergreens or something like that, a group mind, ever again, because I was able to talk to dead people very conclusively. And I said to JW, well, maybe this is the Evergreens wanting to come back. It's now been over 4 years. So let's try and see if I can talk to something inside you, deeper than your mind. So that was on March 17th, and on the next day, on March 18th, I called him up, and we started chatting, and then I said, okay, I'm not going to say a word. Don't say a word for 30 seconds. Then I'm going to ask a question. So we did that. I asked my question, and JW's voice started talking, the same voice, but as the clock ticked, it was a richer voice, or just had an extra power of knowing, and just started spewing out all the stuff. So I talked to him for 2.5-3 hours, and my wife was there too, and unfortunately I didn't record it, but I used to have to pay the Evergreens, Michael Blake Reed, $500 an hour. Here I was getting 3 hours for free. So with 2 days later, March 20th, we did 5 hours straight. And the main point is that JW came out of trance the first time and said, wow, what bliss. I want to do this all the time.
And
so
Bob,
I'm now
on.
Up to 70 hours
or so.
We're
going to our first break. And
okay.
You can come back and talk about how JW lived in a land of bliss from here on out. You're listening to Rumor Mill News Radio. I'm talking with James Martinez, Bob Neverett, and we're soon going to be talking with Ion. And Bob's explaining who Ion is. We'll be right back here on the Micro Effect Radio Network.
Above the dark despair shines a light that we can share. One step into the light, one step away from night. It's the hardest step you're gonna take. The ship to take you there is waiting at the head of the stairs that lead up through your open mind.
You're listening to Rumor Mill News Radio. This is Raylan Allen. I'm talking with James Martinez and Bob Neverett. And before we went to break, Bob was telling us how he met Ion. And so, Bob, I'm just going to let you continue with your story.
So from 1980 till 2004, I had over 64 private sessions with the Evergreens, 6,500 to 7,000 entities they said they were. And they were, most of them, $500 an hour. So that's 24 years and all that expense. Well, within 1 month with JW, channeling Ion, I've had 64 hours of research and covering all kinds of history and other issues. And so my archive is built up already, and that's within 1 month. So that shows us how enthusiastic JW feels about the experience of channeling Ion. It's changed his life, probably changed mine in some way, or at least what we think and know. And I will just say, before we bring Ion on this issue, there was another medium that came in Toronto, Dave Watson, I think his name is, and he channeled something called the Willows. And I once asked him, a year or so ago, how many entities is contained in the Willows? And they said there were 293,000. So with the Evergreens at 6,500 to 7,000 entities, and the Willows with 293, I asked Ion, how many are you? And Ion said, think of a dodecahedron, which is 12 triangles touching each other, making a sphere. It's one of the platonic solids. And they said, take one side of a triangle and think of 640 entities, and then they said square it or cube it or something, and it became about 3,000 or 4,000 entities in my head. And then they said, now move 1 degree and add that same amount, 3,000 or 4,000 entities on that. And I think it meant, maybe I can clarify this, that you move through the triangle, and then you also eat 1 degree, adding on 3,000 or 4,000 entities, and then you move around the sphere 360 degrees. It's something like that. But I concluded, well, there are zillions of you. And Ion said yes. And then Ion went on to explain that, building on the breakthroughs of Edgar Cayce, cosmic awareness, the Seth, the Evergreens, and the Abrahams, Abraham's channeled through Esther Hicks, that the veil has been thinning externally in our general relationship to the non-physical. That's what Ion calls the astral plane, and the veil within ourselves, so that they stand on the shoulders, or resonate on the shoulders of the media, the channel, the entities I just mentioned. And they basically say it's so easy now for us to access the non-physical that it is understandable why JW doesn't have to go through any elaborate rituals to channel Ion. Michael Blake Reed had to be put into trance. It was a minute and a half process, and he could only stay in trance for an hour. JW seems to have no problem being trance for as long as we can tolerate it, and so it's symptomatic that Ion is a kind of a completion, it seems to me, of a lot of the, quote, New Age world of experiencing channeling as we understand it in the 20th century. This is a new breakthrough. It's a new technology, a new access. It's just like our Internet, where everything is immediately available and children can know anything regardless of the content. So that kind of easy access is what the astral plane is miming.
Bob, I have a question. Needless to say, here on this show, with everything that we have discussed, this particular week we've been discussing electronic harassment coming from our government. And one of the aspects of the electronic harassment is voice-to-skull technology. How do we know that JW and ION aren't some, you know, Navy intelligence project?
That's a good question. And ION has had a lot of questions from me, and therefore has built up its ability to talk. I think that's the first question for ION. I will restate it. Greetings, Ion.
Good afternoon.
Ion, we have a question from our host, Raylan. There is apparent evidence that the Navy, U.S. Navy, is working with electronic technology. What was the name of it? Voice what?
It's called voice-to-skull technology. It's a part of their electronic warfare program, putting voices in people's heads.
Voice-to-skull technology, apparently the Navy, it's rumored that they can put this information in people's heads so that people think, voices in people's heads, people think that they are channeling. And Raylan is asking Ion if you are an effect of voice-to-skull technology on JW.
No, no, not at all. The reality is very simple. In the application of what we would describe that would be easily understood with that technology would be called as head gravy, where you stimulate the process of the intersensory perception that allows someone to wane. The same technology would be the case of sodium phenethol being a quote-unquote a truth serum. The same technology could be used. People can do, be, or have anything that they would like to be, do, or have. It's one of the essence building points of creation. But we have not been engaged with your military, with your government, for that to be that reality. But the technology is vast. It is vast.
Now, they are experimenting with this. What kind of success are they having with people who are unwitting?
Well, it has to do with the relationship of how much resistance there is in the individual human being. Let's be clear. Every human being on the planet now, presently, they have non-physical inside them. The Christian faith would call that the spirit or the soul. It's how the coroners determine whether or not you're alive or dead. You understand there's even, sometimes it's very difficult in the medical system to die when they've taken over every aspect of the physical part of your meat sack body, of the human being part, to the point where they can sometimes come to the conclusion that they're brain dead, meaning there's no alpha waves. The technology stemmed from the understanding that there is actual synaptic ending refraction in the form of a wave, which is a frequency. And that's how they could calculate whether there was activity going on in the brain, which maybe or maybe not was having a causal effect on the spinal cord. So that's where that technology or understanding, or maybe a science, I'm sure there'll be a science to it before it's over, to develop those concepts. Because the query came was, how was it that some individuals, human beings, seem to be more sensitive to other non-physical energies or frequencies. How could is it that they could sometimes gain information, knowledge that there's no way they could have otherwise, meaning it wasn't anything they could, quote, how do you say, Google. It became a very interesting way that no one else could know. And that's what developed this trying to pin down this actual flow of information through a new frequency. And then to add insult to injury, to come back to that, to then figure or calculate a way to activate that same persona of someone who could flow the non-physical in their physical bodiness. And that's where that came from.
And Ion, I'm going to have to interrupt because we're on a radio program and we've got to go to commercials.
Very,
I hope
very
you
fine.
Understand. You're listening to Rumor Mill News Radio on the Micro Effect Radio Network, and I'm talking with Ion. And Ion will explain who he is soon, and we will be right back. You're listening to Rumor Mill News Radio on the Micro Effect Radio Network. I'm talking with Bob Neverett, James Martinez, and Ion. And we had just asked Ion how can ordinary humans know whether they're channeling something from Navy intelligence and probably from all of the intelligence units in the world now because they pass on technology like this. Or are we? How can we tell if it's somebody from a government putting voices in our heads with the technology, or how do we know if this really is a voice from the higher realms, from the source? So, Ion, how do we know this?
Very wonderful. That's a fabulous question. You resonate. There is a resonance. Just as you have a frequency in a radio program, those emitted frequencies are everywhere. Some can pick them up, some cannot pick them up, or sometimes they're not clear, or maybe, as you say, staticky. How you discern the difference is the resonance of where this information that's flowing, where it, the feeling place that it brings you to. It becomes a very clear, simple, easy understanding. For example, we would never have information or direction that would lead to a conspiracy or basically a direction or a driving force for human beings who would have askings. And so therefore it can become very clear that as askings or questions come forth, then the answers that come sometimes can be verified in a factual matter, how it is recorded. And sometimes then it comes into the feeling place of you, of your knowing. We have the resonance of the non-physical that is within the individual. For example, as you personally are asking questions, we from the non-physical pull and pick up from you your source for the question and can divinate that down into the exact question of your wanting, basically. You could ask another question that we could answer, and you would know because of the resonance that was in you, and that can't be infiltrated or participated like a precipitation, like the rain on everyone. That would be an invasion. That never works that way, because you understand your Navy, your Army, your intelligence agencies. They have non-physical aspects of them also, you see. As in any technology, that the rain falls on the just and the unjust. Well, non-physical is in every human being, and the resonance will clearly give you accurate indication every single time, without fail or exception, regarding its source. And you can tell that by the resonance. The source, a resource, to source over. So to have an entity that would come in and have a causal effect on the mind that would cause someone to be found in what you call this channeling position, could never be outside infiltrated from an agency, I guess is the right way to say that.
Okay, Ion, can I go forward, Ray Lance?
Absolutely, Bob. He answered the question quite well for me. Discernment is the key.
Yes. Now, Ion, maybe bring a little paranoid element here. Are you saying that the research into people who have passed on led to the perception, or became brain dead maybe, led to the perception of the brain frequency, and then that was applied to possible ESP?
Well, no. See, ESP has been around since, for a couple hundred thousand years. That's been about. Actually, once you came into the printing press and the actual information superhighway, before they had all that, many times they just felt their way through what you call life. And you jokingly call those sometimes the dark ages, but actually they weren't so dark. So that information, that's been around a part of your non-physicalness for as long as there's been humanity, okay? But now whether or not you allow it to be activated in your humanness, now that's a different conversation. And if I got you to a new question, we can proceed. Or if you'd like to follow further, let me give another question and we'll direct it.
Okay. Are there people, for example, Raylan, I think it's on our website, Raylan became a channel in the late 70s, and then she found out it was directed information from the Navy establishment. Is that true, Rayon? That's what you say?
That's what I was told. I was told a number of stories that I published in my book, Obregon Chronicle, were actually put in my head through Navy intelligence.
Now, do you see that, Ion? Is that what Raylan experienced?
Well, you know, she could have that creation that showed up in her experience is called a manifestation. And that manifestation can be achieved by anyone, you see. But when you take your power back as a creator in your own right, as you take your power back, that gets sifted away very, very quickly, you see. It's funny that the very information that they supposedly are coming to implant into you actually heightened your reality of sensitivity that allowed you to debunk it almost instantaneously as you came into that knowing and you know better, you see.
And interestingly enough, the voices in my head actually told me this.
Absolutely.
They actually told me.
Absolutely. You may sometimes find yourself caught in the oblivious, but you will never be found unaware.
Okay. But specifically, the stories of Obregon that they claim to have channeled to me were some that they found, alien technology, and translated and then transmitted to me to get out the history of the Earth. I genuinely thought that I was speaking with an entity like you, Ion. And
yes.
Maybe I was at some
yes,
point.
Yes, you were.
Yeah, that's what I think, because some of the lessons that I brought through at that time are profound lessons for humanity.
Mm-hmm. And the non-physical part of you that was speaking wasn't telling the whole wide world. They were just telling you.
Mm-hmm.
But Ion, I'm asking a particular point.
Yes.
Did the Navy establishment try to beam something and trigger Raylan?
They would try any aspect of technology. You're calling it now technology, and actually, old school would call it horse sense. or sometimes mislaid as common sense. But that heightened sense of knowing, it can be experienced, but it can't be controlled. Do you see?
You mean
if they had someone representing non-physical that was in their ranks who was orchestrating and organizing this whole conspiracy, every time that they would come to the place of having that technology to rule the world or control the minds or pick a spot, the individual creator, the human that it was supposed to have an influx ratio of experience on, they are their own creator, you see.
And
so
Ion,
they would sift it out.
I'm going to have to stop you there because we're going to a break.
Yeah.
Folks, we're listening to Ion. This is Rumor Mill News Radio, and this is something that we have never done before. This is premiere time, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Rumor Mill News Radio. James Neverett is my James Martinez is my co-host today. We're talking with Bob Neverett and Ion. And Ion was explaining to us how we as individuals can discern whether or not the information coming through to us is coming from technology that our government has created. I should know. I was married to the man who helped create it. And how we can discern that it is from source, from higher, from a source far higher than anything here on Earth. And so, Bob, I think we'll turn it over to you.
Yes, Ion. I'm reminded of the famous or infamous CIA program called MKUltra. And I was told through the Evergreens that the attempt to use LSD in the 40s and 50s as a truth serum, against communists or terrorists, that they could not make it work because the individual responded to the LSD in a unique individual way, and there was not an ability to make any standards to evaluate whether the truth was not. This is what you're saying for the new technology, and that was the factor for LSD, correct?
Correct. As with any what you call psychotropic drugs, what that creates for you is a disconnect between your flowing mind. You drop resistance. And so there was success in the process, but it took them to their what you call happy place, if that's the perfect word, to have them, there was no balance, there was no beginning point, so they could never get a litmus test of accuracy. So it, like any other thing, when they try to push you creators, you humans, you marvelous creators, because from the source that they're trying to implant into you, you see, it only applies to the creator, which is the human. For example, you can say, put a thought in someone's head. Let's say they had this worked out and they could control the world, okay? And they put this thought in your head. Well, different people are going to respond differently because their beginning places of their point of understanding of bringing it into their experience is the very disconnect that makes them have one suggestion and get 100 responses.
So, talking to Ion over the last month or so, there is a sense, a liberating sense of the autonomy that human individuals have, so that the George Orwell vision of 1984 or the fear of harp technology, from Ion's point of view, this is a joke.
Well, never, never, never. It's the leading edge of creation, you see. Or should you give all the credit to Gene Roddenberry, which activated your whole time-space continuum and traveling faster than warps allow you to excel or proceed through the universe? That came from somewhere. And that resonated, not with everyone, but with some. And that activation then becomes why they woke up one day and says, we really need a microwave oven. And now you don't have to understand a microwave oven to enjoy it in your experience if it is your desire.
But the fear of an Orwellian situation, that is only true for those that align with that image of reality.
Well, you got to get back to the root of fear. When
okay.
You learn as a human being that's connected to source, the source that's in you, not from the FBI, not from somewhere else. See, the source has to resonate with the source that's in you, you see. And if it resonates with you, then you can draw that into your personal experience. And if not, you can very easily be cognitively aware of the emergency exits and slip out of the conversation, you see. But that's the same thing with chocolate cake. Not everyone on the planet just craves chocolate cake. They certainly can if that's their wanting, you see. But if they have an innate fear of chocolate cake, it will end up giving them trouble, you see, because you're also feeding that fear as much as you're feeding the joyful experience that you call chocolate cake.
Well, this naturally brings us up to the present panic of the week, swine flu fever. What does Ion say about the background to that or about the reality of it?
The flu of the swine, yes. It is like any other experience on the planet at any given time. It is a tactile expression of an individual's aligning with a bug, if that's what you'd like to call it. That we'll just use bug because you could go to virus or bacteria or pick something, you see. If you align with that, then you can be in the vibrational proximity of experiencing it. And that's one way of drawing it to you. We jokingly said the way to take care of it is to give it to everybody, and then everybody can have it. And it's kind of like the Black Plague or the Black Death. It was supposed to kill everybody, and yet not everyone died, you say. Or transitioned, since there really is no death. But this scare, fear, can be activated in the human population and those that align with that, because now it's no longer in Mexico, now it's supposedly everywhere. Those that align with that whole process then can enjoy the very best of swine flu, that is, if it is their indeed wanting. And you say, well, no, they never want to have the swine flu. But yet, sometimes, it becomes the path of least resistance, you see.
You said that we should publish a booklet, you're implying, of how to get swine flu?
If they force that booklet on everybody that you have to have the swine flu and here's the guidelines to go by to catch it completely, then this whole fear campaign would, or isn't that the same thing as a pandemic? We mix those up sometimes. Then everybody would look and go, well, that's the silliest thing I've ever heard in my life. What in the world do you mean? I'm not going to do these processes to incubate my own version of the flu of the swine that supposedly is supposed to eliminate my physicalness on this planet. That sounds absurd. And yet, the fear that they spread or try to infiltrate you with, giving you every symptomatic cause, giving you every point of reference, giving you every
signal,
every peanut butter that has salmonella, you know, where does it end? It just goes on and on. And yet, not everyone who ate the tainted salmonella-laced peanut butter expired from your planet.
Would you say that the swine flu virus could be suggested through television and newspapers or whatever all over the world, and some people would be activated by the mere suggestion of it?
Certainly. Not necessarily the suggestion, it's how great a fear campaign that is implemented from it. It's no different than, now stay with me here just a second, it's no different than 2 years ago when everybody had a huge great big house and 3 cars and a vacation home and couldn't get a book a flight because all the airlines were full, to the point that then they said that these hedged positions were now in jeopardy and failing, and you will lose your house. Well, it took a little while, but now people are actually being forced from their homes, you see. And then they stop spending money, which stops the economy, so now you're losing your jobs because they're not producing things that consumers are voting for with their dollar. So then the next thing you know, you have this mass pandemic of the financial world's crumbling about you that makes that a self-fulfilling prophecy? Would that be called pretending, to pretend, to have an intention?
Pretending.
Go ahead.
Okay, so that happened. Do you see the swine flu as an antidote to the previous pretending over the financial collapse, that there's some entities in government or somewhere promoting swine flu as an antidote to the concern that nobody's going to pay their taxes this year?
Well, let's go even further than that. The heavens are dancing. They are so overjoyed, because what's happening is it's forcing human beings to come to the place of the only thing that has ever worked in their experience anyway. It's when they relax and allow. Once they relax and cease having resistance regarding every aspect of their physicalness, that's when the cancer cells don't seem to grow. Okay. Every time you come to the place, if you've lost everything, then you feel better because you have nothing to lose. You see? And it actually puts you in a position of taking back your power. And when you take back your power, that's where marvelous, witty ideas, inventions, intentions come into play, you see.
So if there is a conspiracy to create the swine flu by the CDC or some entity that needs funding, because everybody's losing their funding, so they create a new problem, the zone where you are, the ionosphere, is rejoicing because it'll have an unintended effect.
Absolutely.
On consciousness.
Absolutely. Perfect word. Because once that's done, and if the swine flu doesn't kill you, you must be quite resilient. You marvelous creator, you.
And you're saying the ones that it does kill have made that decision.
Yes, indeed. Because if you understand it, this is kind of a tough place to go right here, and we might hold it for the next section.
We've been talking with Ion and Bob Niveret and James Martinez for an entire hour. It just seems like 2 seconds to me. We'll be right back, right here on Rumor Mill News Radio on the Micro Effect Radio Network. You're listening to Rumor Mill News Radio. This is Raylan Allen. I'm talking with James Martinez, Bob Niveret, and Ion. And this is May Day, May Day, May Day, where the workers of the world are rioting worldwide because they don't like what's happening in the world. And May was named after Maya the Majestic. Ion, she's supposed to be the Earth Goddess who symbolizes the wealth of the world. And here we are in poverty to the point that on May Day, the workers of the world are rioting. What's going on? Can you help us understand this part?
Yes, absolutely. We're delighted. It's a wonderful question. Contrast is what you're describing. Dismay. Isn't that interesting? Coming to a place of contrast is what you use. It's your physical human element that you energize when you want a change. Let's take it to a simpler level. If your shoes never wore out, you'd never get a new pair. And your shoes sometimes have a causal reaction of hurting your feet. And when your feet hurt, then you decide, at that point, I've had enough, I'm going to make a change, and I'm going to enjoy or bring into my experience something now that is comfortable. And so any contrast that comes forth does nothing better but to redefine your new present wanting.
Ion, let's move this into a metaphysical level, that
okay.
Theme you just uttered, and explain what happens to souls that die with unfulfilled creations and the whole escrow principle that you've explained to me privately.
Very good.
Into the guff.
Very good. Well, you've got to go back a little before that. You choose to come forth into physicalness. And the reason that you could choose to come forth is because in your physical bodiness, that's where creation is. That's how you're able to create. See, the non-physical has no time. There's no past, present, future. There's only now. But we, in our non-physicalness, cannot create, you see, because there's no resistance. There's no desire. There's no, it's not a, not sorting the teams of hooray for this one and boo for that one. You choose to come forth to mix it up and create. And as you create, then sometimes you develop disconnections with source. Starts with your mother telling you money doesn't grow on trees, and don't do that, that'll kill you, and don't do this, that'll kill you. Then you come into a place where you have a disconnection with between you and you, you being the non-physical part of you. So you have desires, you want to be happy, you want a new car, you want a new technology, you want world peace, you want whatever you want, okay? And sometimes if those are, if you relax and allow those to come into your experience, then you don't want them anymore, you already have them, you say. So that's an actualized creation or manifestation. But if you get pushed against to a point where you have unrealized wantings or creations, those are safely stored in your escrow. And as you expire or leave your physical body, because there is no death, then though all of those creations that are unrealized then are deposited into non-physical. And that's why the babies that are coming forth now are coming in cable ready. Your young children can program your remote controls, and as you've aged, you don't even know which end of the remote to use. However, they just intuitively know how to defragment your computer. Whereas you have to, that's a learned experience from a new technology from your standpoint. And that's how that happens, you see.
So the escrow, the deposit of the unfulfilled creation into the non-physical, the babies pick up on the latest tech, what has been created here, but also what hasn't been created, and that helps them invent stuff once they arrive here?
Well, it just becomes a not a big thing, you see. It's like losing something and you can't find it. Well, you can't find it because you can't find it because you have a disconnect with the finding of that object. And when sometimes folks ask us to find something and we tell them with full confidence, assuredly, that it'll be the last place that you look. Because when you find it, then you're no longer looking for it anymore. And that's a little tongue-in-cheek, but the same thing is true in non-physical experiences. Once you relax and allow them to come into your experience, then they seamlessly will flow. But if you have a disconnect regarding it, or if you can't have that experience, then you can't, you see, because you're the creator and you're very marvelous and you're more powerful than you will ever know.
You used a word that I've heard quite a bit, Gus, G-U-S, but
yes.
I don't know what it is.
Well, it's the most accurate word that you have recorded so far. We find ourselves many times with new words that don't exist, and yet we have meanings regarding them. So this particular word is a word that easily describes the place where souls are deposited and where new souls coming forth are gathered from.
So in other words, I'm just going to say, let's just say the guy that invented the Cray computer and a whole bunch of other guys like him are in the guff right now. And then there's this little baby that's wanting to come to Earth, and so it passes through the guff and picks up all of his memories and comes back?
And all other rememories. They rememory those aspects of the parts of those physical beings who had unrealized creations. Because the computer creator had parts that he had not yet created yet, but he had wonderful ideas regarding it.
That's for certain.
It wasn't complete. So all the incomplete parts went there, stored patiently in the guff where there is no time. And then as new babies choose to come forth, all of that mingling is all in together. But it's not a specific individual that decides to come back or have another coronation, which is what we jokingly describe when you start with reincarnation. The portion is sum of all, you see. And that's why that your media has such a mass causal effect, because if they can learn how to resonate to all of the non-physical, it can have an activation process. Sometimes that's fear, sometimes that's joy, sometimes it's the war is over and everybody dances, you see. They resonate with that from this physical plane, and that's how you have a good causal reaction to activate a swine flu, a pandemic of biblical proportion, and see, many of those are set up in your understanding as history. Well, we would hope to say accurately, but not so much, records these causal events. You see,
is the guff when a child decides to incarnate, become an experience, the human being, you know, the human instrument,
yes.
Are these technologies assigned to the individual? Are some entities that come in already aware that they're going to be inventing, let's just say, a computer?
Well, that's very interesting. Yeah. Now, from your asking place, we would say no, never. But that's not the case. Some children are naturally prone to being a piano extraordinaire, you see. Some come forth that have an artistic or an artistic view that is just unknown to what anything as man has seen heretofore. So there's absolutely, as long as the connection stays close to non-physical, then those aspirations naturally show up in the human being. Now, sometimes that's through contrast, you see. Sometimes that's not. We didn't say that everybody should have been born in Malibu. It's nice, but, you know, it's not a prerequisite to being happy. So if you are a painter who paints, then you're happy. The only time you're miserable, there's enough paintings in the world, do we agree?
Yes.
I mean, we could live the rest of our time without another new painting. But the painter doesn't see it that way. They are a painter who paints, then they're happy. If they're a chef who's cooking, they're happy, even if nobody eats it. See? It's that process that is the fastest path to their joy. So those individual things can be activated, and the simplest way to describe it is that you are a lover who loves. And the only time that you're not happy is if you're not loving, you say. And that becomes a real simple basis of a symbiosis between non-physical and physical. It's that ability to love.
In the children that you're talking about, are you referring to some people in the culture right now are referring to these children as indigo children? Are these the children that come in with special assignments, or come in with already a knowingness or familiarity with technology and how to interface with it?
Yes, and some are chartreuse, and some are ultraviolet, and some are magenta, and some are eggshell. There's lots of different words that you could use to describe them. And we're basically having a play on words, meaning that all children come forth fresh from source. All children come with no resistance. Isn't it interesting that if they're born in the usual way, that the first experience that they have in their life is the process of being birthed through the birth canal, you see? That's contrast, it's pressure, it's pushing against. That's how they begin that process, you see. So that's the first level of, okay, here we go, now what's next? This was fun, what's next? And then they mix that up, and those different aspects that is in their non-physical can shine. And if you can see that and pick up on that and sort them in a separate pile, then yes, correctly, you could identify them as you described them as indigo children, you see.
But you're saying that all children are indigo children?
Every child born on planet Earth is the closest from source. They came freshest from source.
Why is our government giving all of our children vaccines and Ritalin?
Well, because they have to steer them in a path, because they can't. When they press them down, it's like a lack of ease or a disease. You push here one place and it squirts out somewhere else. The children today aren't having it. They're not going to have it. And even if you push them into that place, they're coming forth fresh from source and they're not going to have it. They're not going to be told. They're not going to be controlled. They're not going to be pushed. Oh, is that what you call your attention deficit disorder? They gave it a disorder.
I have a question now. It's related to that. It's interesting that you brought that up, because I wanted to ask. The psychiatric community and the psychologists that classify quote-unquote disorders, are those classifications, are they going to change in the future? Because ADHD and all these various disorders, are they a response to the acceleration of information happening so fast, or is something in the evolution of human beings changing? Because everybody wants, you know, take this drug for this, take that drug for this, take this drug for this. What's happening with that?
Well, if you're looking at it from the negative standpoint, then it will continue its present course. But if you look up the definition in your psychological manuals, genius is a disorder.
Mm-hmm.
You see? Genius is a disorder. It's not the norm. So therefore, they should create a drug to dumb you back down.
Well, I think that's what they're doing with Ritalin. They're dumbing us back down.
And it's amazing, because Ritalin is a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful thing. We don't push against anything like this, because the contrast that it evokes actually lets you redefine what it is that you are wanting. We get it tangled up sometimes in the physical, that the whole wide world is, you take personal culpable responsibility for the whole wide world, when it really isn't the case. You really are the center of your universe. You're the center of the universe, the one that you're the middle of. And everyone is, you see. And so now their archetypal grid sets up a place of trying to make it as normal as possible, you see. So therefore, the most can fit into what they call their space and time and life. So then everything becomes symbiotically and pleasant and happy and kumbaya, and we're all good. But it's not like that, you see, because not everybody wants a new Maserati. But if you do, if it's your desire, and you can find a place of resistanceless, or that you can have an unquenchable desire to attain and achieve that, that can be your experience, you say. And it have nothing to do with anyone else's universe. Because God doesn't care what kind of car you drive, you say. So it's up to you, the individual creator, to decide what you want in your personal experience, regardless of what your CNN has to say regarding it.
Ion, is there a God as we define it?
Well, what most people think God is, God isn't.
And what do most people think God is?
That they think he's a great, big, white-haired, white, Roman, mythical God sitting somewhere out in the ethers that is sorting the evil ones out amongst you.
And Ion, again, I apologize.
No, we're good. Yes.
Break. And when we come back, I want you to finish what Bob just asked you.
Very good.
Who is God? What is God? You're listening to Rumor Mill News Radio on the Micro Effect Radio Network. And let me tell you, folks, you're hearing something that I don't think has ever been broadcast on radio before. We'll be back. You're listening to Rumor Mill News Radio. We're talking with Ion, and Ion was just about to explain to us who or what God is, and Bob asked him to explain what God isn't, or...
What we think God is, what our image is.
Okay.
Yes, of course. We humans come into a place of being told what a deity is, what God is. So if you take it from the non-physical or our aspect, God is the non-physical part of you, the human being, which is the creator. Because everything that is created, you create, you see. Not non-physical, physical creates. So therefore, what you know as God is actually God inside of you.
Yes, if God doesn't create.
He can't create because that's non-physical.
And we call him the great creator.
Is that human beings are gods in amnesia?
Well, if there's a disconnection, yes. But there doesn't have to be the disconnection. The Christian faith is waiting on the Messiah to return. Okay? The Jewish faith is waiting on the Messiah to come the first time. And they at least were sharp enough in their description to say, we won't use the name of God, you see, because that would be too far. And yet, when Moses was asked, when he asked the non-physical, when they say, who are you, the non-physical told Moses, tell them that my name is I Am. So Moses comes down and they say, what's the name of God? And he says, I Am. So if you run a little exegesis on that whole process, it becomes very, very, very clear after a second. Isn't it interesting that it takes mouth-to-mouth resuscitation sometimes to breathe life back into a human being?
So in other words, you're saying that Moses was the first to say, I am God.
Because non-physical told him that was the name of God.
And so you're saying we are all gods.
You are.
And we're not gods when we go to heaven.
That's correct. Then you leave your creative ability and you go back to non-physical.
So
which is a very
delightfully
wonderful place. Don't. We're not saying that.
But we are most powerful here on earth.
You only create in your physical form.
Okay. You know, today also was the day, May 1st. May 1st, it has lots of significance in the world, and it's interesting that you are on the radio today. May 1st, 233 years ago, was the day they established the group called the Illuminati, or the Enlightened Ones.
Yes.
And now we feel, most of us feel, the Illuminati are not only they are not enlightened, but they are trying to control us, to enslave us.
How's that working for them?
Well, it doesn't seem to be working very well for them.
Precisely. Because you want to have world domination? Great. That's wonderful. But then you're culpably responsible for every nuance of the happenings in the world.
And so in other words, is that why communists are atheists, so they don't have to believe in karma?
Well, do Christians believe in karma?
Oh, you're right. Christians don't believe in karma either.
So,
but they do believe, you know, you reap what you sow, and isn't that karma?
No, it is not. That is reaping of a harvest, you see. That's not karma. Karma, the dynamic of karma that comes into play that even non-physical has an issue with, is you never can get it wrong and you can never get it done because it would end the universe. Creation would cease. So in that aspect, you can't come through a life and then have retribution for things that you did not to someone whose standard, your standard, to come to a place that you have to have the payback penalty phase for living the deliciousness that is life. See, you're so free, you can choose bondage. That's the ultimate freedom.
And a lot of people seem to be choosing it these days.
And that is their absolute creation, and you can't stop it, nor not have much luck at even pushing against it.
Right, so, Ray, then as a result of these people choosing bondage, they'll die supposedly unfulfilled or not creating a lot, and that'll make the babies even more creative. So we
likely
can pray, that's why James...
Likely of the swine of the flu is this newest, hottest topic thing that's going on about you right now.
That's why James and I say, bring on martial law, we want the contrast, because that'll be to our benefit as creators. You like that idea, Ion?
It's very interesting. It's very interesting. There's always relief when you cease hitting yourself in the head with a hammer.
What would happen if, say, in a city the size of, I don't know, Dallas, Texas, had 200,000 or 300,000 people demonstrating and asking for martial law, what would that do to the rest of America?
Well, just it depends on what Lou Dobbs thinks of it.
Yeah, Lou Dobbs is a great interpreter.
Correct, you see. So the answer to that question is, if you don't push against that whole process, very quickly they don't have enough jails to put everybody in. And the jailer's in jail too, is he not?
That is correct.
So,
and what kind of karma? What kind of karma do jailers ensue? I mean, what do? It's like our whole world is based on part of our whole world is based on hurting or denying other people their rights.
Well, but see, the people have to take their inalienable rights, you see. And if you want your government, now that's interesting. You want your government to take care of the poor. You want your government to feed the hungry. You want your government to create infrastructures. You want your government to provide municipalities to provide you with services. Everything that could be your own creation, you lean on someone else to do for you, and then when they control it, you say, stop right there. You're not going to be the boss of me. And yet, they control your electricity, they control your water, they control where your sewage goes, they control your taxation of the owning of the document of your papers, of your house. You give all this away, and then you say, but now, you don't have to have any, you can't have any control.
And maybe we need to find out how to get it all back.
Well, that's easy. If you get into the, you're getting to the only thing that's ever really worked anyway.
Okay, let's answer that on the other side of the break.
Yes.
Folks, you're listening to Rumor Mill News Radio. I'm talking with James Martinez, Bob Neverett, and Ion. And we're just about to learn how to take our power back. Bob Neverett and James Martinez have brought us a new and wonderful experience. They've brought us Ion. And Ion, before we get back to you explaining to us how we can take back our power, I just have to share two listener comments. One listener said, Ion just said fear can create the experience of the thing feared. And as Joe put it, lo, that which I feared has come upon me.
Precisely.
And the other reader said, I'm just loving this. We're laughing, laughing, and laughing. They're having a wonderful experience listening to you.
And every time you have an activation in your physical beingness that resonates with the non-physical part of you, those are the ones you most typically find naked dancing on their roofs.
Well, that is extraordinary because my three little doggies have been dancing and laughing for 3 days now. They must have known that you were coming on the radio.
The beasts of your planet are fabulous because until they pick up your disconnection, they are at the top of their game.
That's right.
They don't fear reprisal.
Oh, they don't. I know they don't.
They don't. And that's a perfect example. And that's a good way to answer the question that you had just posed so brilliantly, to put into the context of how do you take your power back? Okay. Everything that you do in your physicalness is for the thought, the feeling place, that you will feel better in the doing of it. That's why you eat. That's why you drink. That's why you do, you shoot something, smoke something, do something. See, it's for the thought that you'll feel better in the doing of it or the having of it. You see? And once that comes into the place, then it becomes a very easy, easy way for everyone to have a simple spark activated in the non-physical part that is their beingness, their soul, because, see, otherwise if you forfeit that, then you're dead if you died. But if the simple way to describe this is take no action whatsoever until you ask this one very simple basic question. And that question is, what is the fastest path to my joy? Okay? And once you answer that, then take that action. We're talking down to even deciding whether or not to brush your teeth. If it's not the fastest path of your joy, then it will not be fruitful in your experience. Because we must tell you, most of them fall out anyway, your teeth, that is. But if you align with that process, that your mouth is refreshed, that you clean your mouth and it's refreshing to those around you that are in your experience, then absolutely engage in that physical action of brushing your teeth, you see. And that's very, very, very simple, because most everyone on the planet engages in that, or do they, you see. If it's the fastest path to your joy, then absolutely. Now, when that comes along that way, what you're going to find is there's a euphoric, blissful place of enlightenment, okay? And it makes no difference who does what to you, you see. You can't orchestrate it any other way, because the raper has to be, he has to have a victim. Well, that victim has to be in that vibrational alignment, otherwise they never, how do you choose to rape one person rather than another? Or how does a raper decide to choose you and not someone else, you see? How does a murderer, how do you hook all that up, you see? And in the fastest path of your joy, you will find the non-physical part of you will start giving you hunches. Have you ever heard of hunches? Have you ever thought of urges? Have you ever thought of something that you would want to engage in that you found just to be fabulous? A piece of music that brought you to tears? Of an experience that was just so exhilarated, by the time you got off the roller coaster, you wanted to get right back on. Those parts activate that blissful state of joy. And the more you come into that knowing, the more normal that will feel. Okay? Now, yes, oppression can drive you to a wanting of it, but some people who've never had a hot shower wouldn't necessarily enjoy a hot shower. You see? It would be too foreign to them. But once you come into the place that you can be, do, or have anything that you want, then you come into the place that it becomes a knowing. What is it the fun saying is, I think I know. I think I know. No, if you put commas in that, it's I think I know. Now all of a sudden, once you're empowered with that knowledge and you're not pushing against it, then that can, because the world can do whatever they want to do, but it won't have to affect the whole wide world, and rarely ever does. It doesn't. Then you come into a place where it becomes normal. When it becomes normal, then guess what? You are officially empowered. It's the next logical step. Then you don't need a government to direct your affairs. Then you don't need a Senate subcommittee to decide your rightness. You don't care what they say. You're going to do what you're going to do, and that's appropriate, you see. But some would push against anything to the place where, even with firearms, well, in the U.S. you have the right to bear arms. Well, then they made that illegal, or made it so you had to jump through so many hoops that was oppressive. Till now, only what you call the bad guys have the guns, you see. we don't know them as bad guys, but those are the ones that pushed against that system of saying, I don't care what you say, I'm going to have a firearm, and good. And if you don't like that, put me in jail. Well, okay, put everyone in jail. Well, okay, you're out of jail. So now what are you going to do? You see? And when you take that power back, then you come into a place of full-blown creation. It becomes, you can live your life in such a way that you have a, so much as a thought of something that you would enjoy, and then the heavens, all of non-physical, goes to work immediately, orchestrating that whole experience for you to enjoy as your creation. And that joy that comes from that becomes very, very addictive. Because now you, anything that's not joyful, no pain in your body, you're able to function. All the cells in your body start working the way they're supposed to. They make copies, you see, photocopies of themselves. And so if there's resistance, then they produce resistance, you see. And that becomes a simple, easy way for you sometimes for it to show up as a causal experience in your physical body, because it's going on in your non-physical, attributing to the reality of what's the fastest path to my joy.
So Moses manifested manna in that spirit.
The people allowed manna to come into their experience.
What gave them the notion that it existed?
They trusted their head, Moses, because after all, remember, he's the one that took them out of bondage and then put them out in the desert to starve to death. You see, many of them came to a place of saying, wait, we were in bondage in Egypt, but at least we knew we were going to eat.
So then Moses said, what will I do next, Lord?
Well, he was following non-physical, the cloud of glory. It was a cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night.
And we will get right back to the cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night. On the other side of this break, we're talking with Ion and Bob Neverett and James Martinez and me, and it takes all three of us to keep up with him, to keep up with Ion. We will be right back. You're listening to Rumor Mill News Radio, and Bob Neverett, James Martinez, and I are having a conversation with Ion. Ion, I don't know how you describe yourself. How do you describe yourself?
A group of non-physical entities that are joined together, many and separate, that flow and resonate with the non-physical in the individual.
Okay.
So Ion is inside of us?
The non-physical inside you resonates with the non-physical that is Ion.
What does Ion think of the theme song, the male voice? The words seem to be supplementing what you're saying.
They are very, very clear, and that actual score was from an alignment with Source. Where that piece came from.
It's, I believe, beautiful. That. I was always going to have the man that wrote it on my first radio show that was called One Step Into the Light, and so I'm going to have to do that. Ask,
yes,
him where he was when he wrote that.
Yes. Who is it?
It's the Moody Blues. I can't remember which one of them wrote it, though.
Okay. So the crown of glory and the night of some, the pillar of night we were talking about.
You were giving reference to Moses causing manna when the Israelites were in the desert for 40 years. They had no resources. Oh, but they did. And once they realized and aligned with that process, they moved with the cloud of glory. And that cloud was the non-physical resonating in those participants, the ones in the desert. There was a cloud by day that they followed. They moved with the cloud. There was a pillar of fire by night. That pillar of fire was a physical manifestation of their knowing that their God would deliver them out of their oppression, because he already had, you see. It started becoming next logical step business, you see. Then those physical manifestations, because they had no resistance regarding it, allowed manna to fall from heaven, and it was on the ground every day. And they consumed all that they wanted. They didn't hoard it or save it because there was no lack. Then the next day, there was also manna, more than they could consume.
What did it taste like?
Locusts and wild honey.
One of the guests that we've had on the radio show believes that he has figured out what manna is, and he says it is gold ions. Ion, how do you feel about that explanation?
Those are perfect. Those are perfect words. Those are perfect words because it becomes a basic flow of what you call nutrition. Well, if you come into non-physical, you don't need nutrition. So, therefore, those are perfect words as you describe it, you see. You come into a place where their bellies were full. And anything that you call that, some might call different aspects of food that same type of a basic element of life. But you see, that waxes and wanes as you go through the planet because great parts of Indonesia enjoy the supplication of bugs and find them delicious.
I just want to read you what he says. He says, manna is an ionic form of gold, like it is found in stars. It's life-giving and sustaining when eaten in a form that provides a metabolic pathway into the cells. Gold was vaporized during active smelting operations that were ongoing in the Sinai during the Exodus. Atoms of gold were sent aloft. They cooled. Water molecules formed around airborne particles to form raindrops that fall from the sky like manna did. And that's what he's saying. Manna contained gold ions.
Precisely. Precisely.
And you are ion.
We are.
Something, a real connection there.
There is, there is. And that spark that activates in your viewers is the same spark of the non-physical that allows them the knowing that they can indeed take their power back and that they can do, be, or have anything, anything. There are no limits. Prayers. What prayers does God not hear? All of them, correct?
That's correct.
What prayers does God not answer?
Well, none of them. We all get exactly what we pray for.
Well, you get what you allow into your experience, you see. Because the God inside you activates that prayer life. Some call it meditation. Imagine that, the quieting of the mind. Some call it aligning, allowing. You come into a place where you have a prayer, a wanting, and you can't do it on your own. So you ask the higher power to take care of it for you, you see. Now that higher power is already inside you. So then as you align with that asking, Source says your wish is my command, not pray your prayer again and if you say all the words right, then we'll listen. No, that resonance of that prayer position in you then can bring that into your experience, and it can be a seamless, simple process. Or, just like Moses, you can take a three-day journey across the desert and make it last for 40 years. Either way, it's your asking, it's your wanting. And as you align with it, that's when it shows up as a physical manifestation or representation of your creation.
You listen, we're all silent. We're all speechless right at the moment. But you know, we can't stay speechless on a radio, so I had to say something, but I have to admit I am speechless. So,
James, do either
of you have a thought?
I got lots to say.
Go ahead.
The Marsh McLuhan used to emphasize that the effects precede the causes, not that the effects come after the causes. The effects precede the causes. Ion, could you relate that to the Abraham's principle, channeled through Esther Hicks, of 1-2-3-ing, and then McLuhan's point, effects preceding causes, which means 3-2-1-ing. Maybe it's appropriate to get into that, because you just already explained it. now,
correct,
in other words.
Correct. It's even simpler than that. We were completing in the process of what's the fastest path to your joy. And that question is asked from where you are. See, humans take themselves most everywhere they go. They rarely don't. Most everywhere they go, they are. Okay? So you are where you are, and that's okay. So you can be the head of all, or you could be the least in the kingdom, and you're just as powerful a creator. In every causal action that you take on, you define your asking, source takes care of it, and then you have to wait until you line up with that manifestation. And when you line up with that manifestation, then it becomes in your reality.
That's Abraham's principle.
Every single time, without fail or exception. There's a little larger aspect to it. If you could, like a liftoff of a rocket, where they don't count up, they count down. They rarely stop the countdown at 2. They get down to 3, 2, 1, liftoff. Okay. Well, at 3, that's when you see the process that you are to be your future experience, your now experience, and that doesn't have to be a long span of time, because when you get to the part of the countdown that's 3, 2, 1, you better hold your ears, because it's almost time for liftoff. You see, you've orchestrated this all in your knowingness by defining what it is that you want. Okay? And once you have that fully developed in your mind that is the creator, and that resonates with the non-physical, it doesn't have to, but it certainly can, then 3, you have defined those wantings. 2, it's not your work. You have nothing to do with that process. The non-physical part of you goes to work and orchestrates, aligns. It makes the man in the truck with the wrench to change the tire that comes to change the tire that happens at the very same time that your tire goes flat, and you have that interaction, and it's meaningful, and you're thankful that they were there, because you'd have been stuck because you didn't have your charger for your cell phone, so it's already out, and you're 100 miles from nowhere, and you didn't know what you would have done otherwise. When the solution shows up the same time the problem does, then you're on the right path, you see. So we went down that path just to sort of set that order, but coming back very simply with everything, too, is when Source works out the details. And humans jokingly use the phrase that the devil's in the details. Well, no, not so much. It's actually in the divining process. Then you get down to 1. 1, they've already ignited the engines, you see, at that point. 1 has a causal effect on your asking. Of your asking. Your stretching, your becomingness, your oneness.
Your contrasting. Asking is contrast, right? Contrast.
Yes, but sometimes, see, that's worked out in the third step.
Mm.
You see, when they check the operating systems before the rocket goes off, they don't wait to 1 to start checking. You see. So then what happens when you get to 1 and if it has a causal effect on your asking, then that sets off the liftoff. And then that manifestation, whatever that is in the 1 that you were asking, can seamlessly, in a next logical step, not 100 years down the road, but right here, right now, can be your experience, can be your manifestation. And that can be anything. It can be everything.
So the effect of what you create shows up even before the apparent cause of it.
Every single time. Every single time. Specifically, time is a funny thing. Because, see, you humans created it. Oh, wait, you humans created everything. So it's no surprise that you indeed invented time.
And we're going to take it right up with time on the other side of the break. We're talking with Ion. And regardless of what you think of Ion or channeled information, you have to admit that this is stretching your mind in ways you've never had it stretched. We'll be right back on Rumor Mill News Radio. With Bob Neverett, James Martinez, and Ion. You're listening to Rumor Mill News. We're talking with Ion, and it takes 3 of us to keep up with him. And so, Ion, I'm just going to give the floor to you. You can either continue what you were saying, or you can tell us what we really need to learn. And
well, there's not much you need. You have every component of life to bring you happiness at your fingertips, and you're the creator. So if it's a simple activation of that process that you already have, then it gets to be a pretty blissful experience. But we'll go back to time, because it's a concept that humans created, you see. It's the end of time, or you judge time. You punch the time clock. You're judged by time, and that's interesting because supposedly everyone has the same amount of time, you see. But yet, they can't even calculate it correctly to make the years work out evenly. So there's a little slip here and there, but that's okay because it corrects itself. It's not a problem. But the experience is that you can say you have an experience that you're enjoying, okay, that's already established as the fastest path to your joy, and that day can go by in an instant. Or something that's working for you, that's enjoyable. Time flies when you're having fun, I guess is the right causal phrase. And then you can have something not so pleasant, or something that you have resistance against, and it is as though the clock stops. It goes on forever, you see. It just won't end. It goes on and on and on. Insomniacs experience that time goes on for years when you can't sleep and you're tired, you see, to have that disconnect of resting, of reconnecting with Source. The time element is very, you can control time if you can come to a place where you have no resistance regarding it.
I have a question for Ion, and this is in relation to time. There's been a lot of discussion in books written about time travel. Has this government or any other government successfully achieved that, or is that just fiction?
Well, what is fiction? Is that pretending?
Right.
Well, then that's a pretended notion. It's a pre-intention. Because they said that about the internet, you see, 50 years before it was created. You see? And that's not fiction, that's real. But wait, when did that happen? When everybody started using it? I mean, there are people on the planet today who still don't believe in gravity, and yet they enjoy the experience of it. So, is time travel a reality? Absolutely. Remember, we've already pretty well established that you can do, be, or have anything. That includes all things. That means without nothing or no thing. So it absolutely is tangible and appropriate. And it's even simpler than that. Who established that light travels, which is what you gauge time by, at 186,000 miles per second? Well, if you found out that that was not the case, you would have a causal effect on time, would you not?
Mm-hmm.
And how would you go about gauging that, you see? Because it's that referenced point of time. So, to speed time up or slow time down is all in your creation, you see. But you can't come into that with a tremendous amount of pre-worked out rules and regulations, because you, the marvelous creator, will not allow it to usurp your belief system. Now, that's interesting. What's a belief? A belief is just a thought that you've been thinking for a very long time. Oh, wait, there it is again. You see? That's how it's established.
That fits in perfectly with what one of our listeners just asked. Well, first of all, Hobie says hi. You must know Hobie, or
yes, indeed.
Some relationship to him. But the reader wants to know how to get out of the time, or the fear loop.
The fear loop?
Yes.
Oh, very simply, have no resistance regarding it.
In other words, it doesn't exist?
No, have no
resistance
regarding
it.
I'm sorry?
Do you mean yield?
Well, if that's the fastest path to your joy, yes.
Okay.
You see, that's orchestrated and organized that way. That's how that works.
I know. Can you kind of explain that in another way? Because I don't understand what we're supposed to do to get out of the fear loop.
Oh, okay. Have any time there's fear. Okay. What is fear?
Mm-hmm.
It's a disconnect. I don't like the particular outcome that will take place because I have disconnect regarding this thing. Children used to have fear of the what you call boogeyman.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, it lived under the bed, and then they couldn't sleep. They had disconnect regarding that of going peacefully to sleep to reconnect back to the source. So that's when the call would come, Mom, the boogeyman is under my bed and I can't go to sleep. Well, how they'd solve that is they'd come with their flashlight or turn the light on, but try to keep it as peaceful as they could so they couldn't drift off to sleep. Look under the bed and even let them look to see that there is no boogeyman there. Okay? But the fear of that boogeyman sometimes could interrupt their ease in going to sleep, you see. So how you overcome that is there's several ways, and that's why we said it's whichever is the fastest path to your joy. But one way to do it is expose it. Expose the dynamic of what you're afraid of or what your fear is. So your fear sometimes can be driven. I'm afraid if I don't pay my bill on time, they will disconnect my service. Okay? But that's not necessarily the case, but you expose it. Isn't it interesting when you're filing applications in the money world, they'll ask you many times, have you ever filed for bankruptcy? Well, it's very interesting. Why would that ever even come up or be necessary that they would need that information? Well, the reason is they know if you've gone through that process, you're no longer afraid of it. You see, you are actually empowered. And they want to know that right up front because the power that they would wield over you in a fear-based reality, that fear then can now, you understand seamlessly, that the boogeyman really isn't under your bed and has no power over you, and therefore you don't have to have fear regarding that experience. Okay?
Yeah, so you have to be afraid of bankruptcy to get the loan.
Correct, because you're not empowered to know your whole... You take your power back when you understand that process.
Well, yeah, if you don't fear bankruptcy, you don't get the loan.
Well, if you check the box yes, they know you've been empowered because you understand that whole process.
So then you will come up with your payments.
Well, if you're afraid, if they can catch you in the fear trap of it, then you're a much better patron to have than one who can take his power back.
And you're saying that the actual bankruptcy courts look at that and
no. People that are, when you are applying with what you call a URLA, that's a question on those forms. They want to know in your credit worthiness or history, which is kind of interesting in and of itself, but there's a question in that comes, have you ever filed for bankruptcy, yes or no, and if you have, what kind, you say. They want to know that in their application process, to judge, to determine whether or not you are credit worthy.
Okay. I understand it now.
Okay, now let's do another fear. Let's deal with the fear of the flu of the swine.
Okay.
To bring you back to full circle. Some people have germ phobias. You see. They're afraid of germs. They're afraid of going to the bathroom in a strange place. They're afraid of leaving their home. They're afraid of spiders, snakes, light, dark, water, heights, falling, themselves, relationship. You know, see, pick a phobia. I mean, it's quite rampant. And how you expose those are coming to a place every single time, without fail or exception, is you either expose them or you not push away from them, but embrace them. Embrace them. And when you embrace them, the non-physical part of you kicks in, and it's a resistanceless reality, so therefore there's nothing they can do to you, fear-wise. There's nothing you can do to yourself, because now Source has taken over that process, and you're copying good cells over and over and over and over. Oh, that's what your doctors call a healthy immune system, by the way. Immune system, isn't that interesting? They come into a place to where in every aspect of your knowingness, nothing can have any power over you that you don't allow. So every conversation is two conversations. So your listener has asked the question, how to overcome fear. And one way to do it is to expose it, enlighten it. You'll become enlightened. So now it's all exposed. Every aspect of that fear has now been acknowledged. It's witnessable, you see. And then, or two, embrace it, meaning if someone comes to you and they want to rob you and you've lined up with being robbed, and then they decide that you can identify them, so they put the 9mm to your head and they get pull the thing to make it be ready to fire, and you very confidently, very easily, very knowingly say, go ahead. Who is your actor that would say, make my day? Mm-hmm. Because in that aspect, if you're not lined up with leaving your physicalness and going to non-physical, fear of death would be what we would be speaking about, then guess what? Even if he pulled the trigger, the gun wouldn't fire. Or even if it was pointed to your temple, he would miss. Even, you see what I mean? Once you come in that place, if you're not being in the vortex or alignment of leaving your physical body, then that will not be your experience.
Oh, boy.
Even if you had, I wonder where
all those tones came from.
I think it came
from me, but sorry about that.
Oh, okay. Very, very wonderful. But that, oh, it didn't cause a fear in anyone, I hope.
No.
I think it probably released some.
Ah, marvelous, marvelous, marvelous. So in that aspect or place, then you can have no fear, or you can become fearless. And that's the basic cognitive reality of coming into your power, you see. And once that comes into the place where you're not pushing against anything, there's no room to activate a fear cell that would replicate and become a great big thing. But if you have a little bit of fear and you don't do anything about it, as far as either exposing it or embracing it or just almost ignoring it sometimes, but now on a good agoraphobic, you'd have a hard time conveying it that way, because everything in their knowingness says, I cannot go outside, you see. I must stay in my home thing. Well, but if that's the fastest path to their joy, there's nothing wrong with that, you see. But once you come into the place of addressing it, exposing it, or embracing it, then it becomes not really a big deal, okay? And if it's not a big deal, then, wait a minute, what are we talking about? Fear. If it's not a big deal, then the fear is diminished and or eliminated from your experience.
So Roosevelt was wrong when he said, we have nothing to fear but fear itself. He was creating
a fear.
That's
not what he said. That's not what he said. He said, the only thing there is to fear is fear itself.
And he meant what you've been saying, but it could have been interpreted as, well, that's just another fear.
Correct. 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 The Buddhist for centuries, they say that if you can quench desire or wantings, that the product of that is enlightenment. And so we just simply ask the question, is the quenching of fear, the quenching of a desire, is that not a desire? Do you not want that in your experience? So, therefore, you have to have a desire to get the enlightenment, But the reason you get the desire is to push against something in your reality. It almost seems the same way that fear is grown, I guess, or expanded, you see.
Yeah,
it rarely starts
steady.
As a great big thing. It's normally a little bitty thing that grows into a great big thing.
Yeah, it's not a static ghost.
Well, unless that's your desire.
is fear part of the human process of evolution, overcoming our fears? Are they necessary things for people to have to grow, or are they just misunderstandings because of bad teaching?
And the answer would be yes, but we'll develop from your asking. From your asking, it comes into a place of is fear contrast? And the answer is most oftentimes yes. So if fear is contrast, it is absolutely paramount in the evolutionary experience because it brings you to the place where I don't want that anymore, I already have it, you see. So just as you manifest yourself into a place of fear, you can manifest and create yourself out of a space of fear.
Ion, I just received an email from one of our listeners, and he says, in May of 2009, a major emanation from the Hunab Ku, an unfathomably large intelligence in the center of the universe, this is according to Mayan cosmology, will inform a magnificent birth of cosmic proportions. I mean, the description that Bob gave me of you sounds an awful lot like that description of the Hunab Ku. Are you part of that?
They are a part of the non-physical that is all non-physical, so yes, in that perspective, absolutely. Absolutely.
And what is this magnificent birth of cosmic proportions? And you'll have to answer that on the other side of the break, I'm afraid.
Very well.
We're talking with Ion. I don't know who or what Ion is, but you have to admit his information is fascinating and mind-expanding. This is Raylan, and we'll be right back here on the Micro Effect Radio Broadcast Network. You're listening to Rumor Mill News Radio. I'm talking with James Martinez and Bob Neverett and Ion, and I just received an email which is telling me that he thinks Ion is the Hunab Ku, and we're reaching the midpoint of the sixth day of the galactic underworld, and this gives humanity an unprecedented opportunity to cooperate with the forces of evolution to fulfill individual and collective purposes and to create a sustainable world of harmony, abundance, and balance with nature. As with any birth, there is also death. Death of that which is no longer supported by these new evolutionary energies. Ion, that sounds an awful lot like what you're talking about.
Yes, it is indeed. Yes, it is indeed. And we would further say, and complete that marvelous directional thought, therefore, every death then would become a suicide.
Oh boy, you sure missed. In other words, if I get swine flu and die, I've committed suicide.
You've orchestrated it, or it would not be in your reality, because remember, you're the creator. And this newfound knowledge that your listener has so graciously shared and opened is yet another, there are lots, is yet another example and experience that you can come into the knowledge and knowing, you see. And once you come in that knowledge of knowing, then you have no more fear regarding it or resistance regarding it.
No.
And as that passes away, then it becomes a seamless expression, you see.
Ion, your presence here upon Earth is recent, is that correct?
That is correct.
And so, why are you here now?
Because you humans had askings and wantings, and this was the fastest path to your joy, to create it as an experienceable human benefactor that you can engage and basically address your knowings and askings from the non-physical that is inside you. It was birthed.
We have met the happiness, and it is us.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
That's
perfect,
right.
Words.
It seems like what you're saying, though, is our consciousness had to be groomed a little bit.
Like contrasted.
I'm looking back at kind of the evolution of beings like Ion, you know, through Edgar Cayce and James
Joyce.
No, not James.
That's a good one too.
I wasn't going to say that, but that he really was bringing through a consciousness like yours, wasn't he?
Yes, indeed.
I was thinking of Seth with Jane Roberts,
yes,
and then going up
Robert
to the evergreen and the awareness, and now
cosmic awareness.
Yeah, cosmic awareness. I was thinking of.
And then the Abrahams, who got a New York Times bestseller.
Now, when all of these others, have they just been preparing the consciousness for you, or would it matter if they had come before?
No, if you really look at them, it's interesting, they kind of came in a sort of an orderly fashion, per se.
That's what I mean, yeah.
But the orderly fashion was only limited by the asking, because you understand, go back to cosmic awareness. That was over the top in its day. I mean, that was strange in its day, you see. But now cosmic awareness is that you can have an experience with non-physical, and you had that all along. But now, wait now, go back. This didn't just start then. Go back into your Christian faith. The Christians are inviting a deity to come live in their heart. You see? In the acceptance of what they call a savior. Well, that's when some of those even call that a Holy Ghost, part of your Godhead, you see. So this isn't a new concept, but the activation, however, is a little different. You're creating a kingdom, a universe. You are the center of your universe. And this process now is coming into a place where individual kingdoms and universes are... We don't like the word awakening. It's being awakened in you, because then we'd have to acknowledge that you were asleep. Well, that's not the case. You were not. You were not asleep all the way through this, and then all of a sudden was awakened. It wasn't like that. It's been a gradual process for some, and then some it's like an aha moment, and go, you mean I'm the creator of my universe? Well, yes, you are, you see. So in that process, it becomes a flowing, a fluidness, and and it's not from the non-physical entity, it's from the place of the creator that is doing the asking. It's what moves your evolutionary chain.
Well, again, you've taken me to that point where I am absolutely speechless.
Well, let me... Ion, do you intend on, at some point, publishing a book?
In the physical part of us, which is that vessel of JW, would absolutely engage and entertain any of that that would be in their wanting. That would make it a seamless, easy practice, so someone could activate this non-physical part of them. So any work that comes to that end, we would absolutely sojourn into experience and existence post-haste.
Post-haste. One lingering thing. There's one of the aspects of the last 40 years in Western consciousness is an entertaining of the idea of reincarnation. I've discussed this with Ion, and I would like Ion to explain the dipping of the water and how reincarnation, as it's presented to us through Hinduism and other religions, is not actually what happens. Could you do that?
Well, sure, but let's take it something so everybody can get a good taste of this. If someone is named king or queen, they have a coronation, correct? How many times are they re-coronated?
They aren't, unless there's a coup and they're toppled and then they get back on, maybe.
But then they wouldn't have. Then they just came back to where they were. They didn't get re-coronated.
Right.
Same thing with the coronation.
And let's hold the thought. We're going to be right back talking about the concept of reincarnation, re-coronation. You're listening to Rumor Mill News Radio on the Micro Effect Radio Network, and I bet none of you ever thought you'd be listening to a show like this. We'll be right back with James Martinez, Bob Niverett, and Ion. You're listening to Rumor Mill News Radio on the Micro Effect Radio Network, and I do have one more question from a reader, but we are talking about reincarnation and re-coronation. And so, Ion, how about if you finish up with the question, what is reincarnation?
It's our great pleasure. Reincarnation, you have to come back to the root of incarnation, okay, or carnation, leading all the way into the coronation. The basic inference that we were trying to give in that parallel or description is it's very interesting to think about that you would be reincarnated as another non-physical entity in a new body, reliving that same experience, you see. And it just can't, it would, why leave the first time? You're the creator, why wouldn't you just stay, you see? So, to come to the place of reincarnation, that comes from the stem of all your unrealized creations that are in the gulf and where your soul or spirit man or the non-physical part of you, when you croak and leave your body, goes into the ethers, or the gulf is a good word to describe it so you can paint a picture in your mind. Then, as a new soul comes forth, a new baby born, then what happens is that soul chooses to come forth. And it comes from all of the non-physical, not from the haunted spirit of Marie Antoinette, who is in non-physical and then comes back as Marie Antoinette, you see. Now, there might be an aspect of Marie Antoinette in thousands, you see. But it wouldn't be an individual person, because the melding of the non-physical part is the part that is pooled, is a good way to say it. So it becomes a part of that whole.
You just said a haunted Marie Antoinette. Is it possible that souls don't go back to God, that they stay around on the astral plane, and that soul can actually reincarnate again?
No, because they can't. Then you're saying, can they come back when they've never left?
That's correct.
You see, so if they never left, they're still here. You see?
But without physical body, because the physical body is dead.
They've had resistance. They've had a disconnection from the physical. You see, they've had a disconnection from the physical, or they'd still be alive. You see, so. They do go back to the holding place of the souls. Always.
So in other words, there's no possibility for one soul to immediately leap back into another body.
That is correct. That is correct, because it would usurp the creation that you humans created.
Hmm.
Because that would mean that a non-physical entity would choose and create. And that would undo all of creation. That would undo the universe.
So, Ian, what about the glass of water? That's the metaphor there.
Yes. A good way to describe it, to picture it this way, is let's say a new baby is born, okay, and they grow at the point that when they become an egg and that egg divides, then that creation is begun. Picture it like a glass of water being a soul. Is poured into that vessel, that baby being grown and born. Then when it's born and it lives its life and it creates and it has contrast and it has joy and lives. Then when it leaves its physical body, it would be the same as that glass of water being extracted from that deceased disconnected physical, non-physical part, and that glass of water being poured back into the gulf, if you will, then new souls coming forth would be dipped out of that same pool. So you don't get that. There would never be a time when you get the identical, exact same glass of water out of that pool. It becomes part of all. Now, some of that glass of water may go into another glass, you see, but you really can't tell the difference, you see.
So we're the same person being born every time from the non-physical perspective.
But mixed with all the other unrealized creations that expanded infinitesimally.
Because of the previous experience of that one entity, which is born new, anew each time, goes in the physical, creates unfulfillment or imprecise, no, unrealized creations, and then that feeds the birth of another soul, which is really us, or me.
And expands it. Look at the population of your planet. How did you increase so much? Even
so, the image
of the flu.
The image of the splitting of the cell is the image of the expansion in the physical between the non-physical and the physical.
Correct. Perfect work.
I rest my case.
I have two questions from readers, and one's for you, Bob. He says, Bob keeps bringing up contrast. He's got the concept very clear in his own mind, and you might want to have him speak about that a bit. It's a different way of saying, in all things, give thanks.
Yes. Ion, do you want to comment before I?
Proceed. You're the creator.
Yes, Ray. I created Ion. This is a major Navy operation with a little help from the Department of State and Hillary Clinton. Obama reneged on him, so we made him a president to keep him out of the way. So as we create this May 1st new Illuminati, the whole point about contrast is it took me a while to get the 1-2-3 from Abraham's becoming 3-2-1, but when I realized that creativity is a response, a kind of resistance to what you're experiencing as a contrast, but you're moving towards what you want to relieve the contrast. So I don't want to make a big deal of it, but it just, for me, contrasting was a way of understanding the motion of experience in the physical. For example, we're talking to Ion, we have to have a commercial break. A little bit of contrast.
And it's a marvelous contrast.
Again.
Right. What'd you say, Ray?
Somebody asked another question.
I said we have to have that commercial break so we can all ground ourselves again.
Yeah, wouldn't it be? Yeah, that's the service. The disservice is, it was ironic. You said, well, we'll find out about the cosmic proportions of May Day after this break. Well, maybe the cosmic adjustment will be no more commercials.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Maybe not. No more contrast. But here's an interesting thing about contrast. As I have talked about in various situations about Ion's message, the idea of thinning the veil between the physical and non-physical, Ion pointed out that would allow cloning.
Oh my gosh, it would, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
That's right.
And so a clone would have a soul, just like
Absolutely.
All the rest of us.
Or you humans wouldn't recognize it as alive.
Well, what about these grays? Are they clones? Are they robots? Do they have souls?
They are you.
They are us.
Is it us in the future?
We don't have time in our world. So, if it's a future experience or is it a past experience? You see, you record them in your history. Well, if they're from the future, yes, but you see, it confuses your timeline.
We are talking with Ion, and he is keeping us very sharp and on our feet. And Bob Jenneret is here, and James Martinez is here, and we'll all be back. You're listening to Rumor Mill News Radio. This is Raylan. And James and Bob and I are having a conversation with Ion. And Ion, one of our readers wants to know, what's happening to the world? It seems to be falling apart.
Oh, no. It's actually the leading edge of creation. It's presenting more contrast than it's ever been. It's the awakening time. It's the best time space that's ever been in your continuum. It is absolutely a precious, delightful creation. You now are activated because of that very question of that position that you're asking drives you into a new place of asking, of wanting to know, of having that experience, of understanding that the boogeyman is not under the bed, that you can be, do, or have anything. And if the government can't control you, then you can control you, you see. Then you come into a place to where the entire heavenly choruses start singing, because now you're to the place that of the only thing that will ever work anyway is that you find your place to relax and allow and create that which you would like to be into your experience. So if the whole wide world falls, it doesn't have to fall on you.
Ion, we have a bulletin here, Raylan. I've done many sessions with Ion here in our beautiful home in Maui, and Ion, Ion is making a point, will say, notice the birds, which you can hear in the window. Well, my wife just said that over the last 2 hours, the birds have been going crazy.
Yes,
here.
They have.
That is an amazing thing, because I've been hearing birds chirping outside my window also.
Well, apparently the beasts of your planet are not concerned with your perilous state of being.
If you could just see what my doggies have been doing the last 3 days, you would know. I've just been watching them. They have been having so much fun and joy that it's like something wonderful is about to happen, not something bad.
It's something that you're allowing into your reality, and they resonate with that non-physical part that is you, and it's pleasing. And God created the heavens and the earth, and he looked out, and he was satisfied. He was pleased.
And what about all of these rumors of war and rumors of atomic bombs and rumors of plague going to kill 4/5 of us?
Well, that's not new. That's not a new concept. There's been wars and rumors of wars since recorded history, you see. Who will provide the grand design of what is yours and what is mine, you see? You come into a place where, in order for you to be right, then everyone else must die. And that's just not the case, you see.
Well, there's many of us that fear that the people with the bombs really do feel that way.
Well, and they very well may. And if you push against them, don't worry, it'll get bigger and it can come into your experience. But it certainly doesn't have to.
And so what I'm hearing you say is that we should just go on with our lives as though the world were beautiful and rosy and peaceful.
We like Gene Roddenberry's version of the Romulan Empire, where it goes into the Vulcans, and the Vulcans come as their job is to live long, thrive, and prosper.
Right.
And that summed up that whole process, and nothing else. No other great expectations were required.
And Ion says, we didn't come here for a long time, but a fun time. But also, Ion says, this new transition allows us never to leave the physical.
Exactly correct.
And so we have not spoken about that new transition. What is this new transition?
Well, your earliest recording issues regarding that is a veil. The original veil was from the dividing of what you call the Ark of the Covenant from everybody else, you see, the mercy
mm-hmm.
seat, that source, okay? And that came into power because they imbued it with power, got so much power attached to it that they had to create a veil to separate you from it, because it was more than you could bear or be exposed to, you see?
Mm-hmm.
All right, now, from the heavenlies, from that same transitional position, humans got this picture of God, remember, somewhere out in the ethers or in heaven, is looking down, sorting out the evil ones amongst you, there was a veil that was created. Now, the angels didn't seem to have a problem going back and forth. I mean, that became a little issue as you roll along. But there was this created veil that separated you from your non-physicalness, from your power, from your insight, from your hunches, from your knowingness, you see, the creation. Now, the veil in our experience is as thin as it has ever been. Okay? But in your individualness, because remember, you're the center of your universe, and you can be, do, or have anything you want to be, do, or have, as you come into your power, you have the capacity to thin that veil from your perspective, and then you can have a seamless interaction with the non-physical. That would be us, you see. And that thinning can allow that power, which is already in you. You already have the operating system. It's already engaged. It's booted. You don't even have to reboot it. It's booted. It's ready to go. But if you have applications that you never activate or use, after so long of a time, your computer will ask you if you'd like to clean up your desktop because you have items that you're not using. And we won't get rid of them. We'll store them in another place until you do, you see. That thinning of the veil opens up a whole new paradigm. It's what the Christian world would be, thy kingdom come. It's the ushering in, the rule and reign of non-physical in a physical parameter. Some others call that heaven on earth. Some others call that utopia. Some others call that the happy hunting ground. Some others call that place of bliss, you see. And that blissful state of allowing can absolutely thin the veil so significantly that you can have simple, easy, in-and-out reactionary causal places that can create heaven on earth, is a good word.
Ion, we've got people wanting to know where they can go online to read more of what you have to tell us.
Well, if you tune in to Bob's ESP show, they can activate their ESP and can just play all the time, and he can give you those details, and there will be further information flowing that would allow them access from their wanting, and can even provide ways for them to contact through Bob to even have interaction, because to engage, if it is their wanting, is the purest form of creation, you see. And that enlightened, spark-activating part of non-physical allows them the same reality that created empires and could have destroyed them, but it created empires mostly. The leading edge of creation is just that. And as it opens, just as your moon waxes and wanes as it twists through this span of time, oh, there that is again, we will very quickly be able to provide you with a outlet to be able to engage and experience and play. We call it co-creating. It's what we, how we describe it, because it's the easiest words that you can get. But yes, that will be made available.
Okay,
Bob,
Rayland.
How do we find that?
You
what
can,
is this hour of ESP that he was talking about?
I call it the telekinetic non-action archetypal grid. And I activate it with Ion every Tuesday evening at 6 p.m. Hawaii time. So that's 9 p.m. California time.
And midnight East Coast.
Midnight East Coast going into Wednesday morning. So 6 p.m. Hawaii time. For an hour, I engage with Ion, and Ion registers, and to my abilities, we register the images and responses to what we talk about. And we've done this 3 times. We'll be doing it this Tuesday. And if you go to our cash flow archives, you can hear the show April 22nd.
Where do we find the cash flow archives?
If you go to the Achieve Radio Network, if you go to achieveradio.com/cash-flow, all the archives will be there for you.
Yes, so you would go to the April 22nd show where we played the first 10 minutes of the first show we did several weeks ago, and that's just on record to hear me interacting with Ion. Now, I would like to, my email, purple@fivebody.com, be put on your site for a while, Ray Land. And that's purple@fivebody, FiveBody.com. All connections with Ion go through that email. So it's very easy to get in touch with email. I'm here to respond.
Okay, that sounds great. I'll have somebody put that up on our website right now so that everybody can see the Achieve Radio, and they can also catch your email, fivebodies.com.
Fivebodies, FiveBodied.
Yes.
Fivebodied.
Okay, is there, we've only got about a minute. Is there, who has the most important thing they want to say? Raise your hand.
Me. Thank you very much for having all of us. That's my first time.
You're very, very welcome. Wow. James, one of these days you're going to have to come back on and talk about what you do, because we never talked about the credit card elimination.
Well, this was a special time today, so
yeah.
That we can do that again later, but this time I think we wanted to bring Ion on to let him speak.
Absolutely.
We've inaugurated, Raylan, a new Illuminati, which includes everybody, not just an elite.
Well, that was just, this is right. This is the birthday of the birth of the Illuminati, and now we are the Illuminati.
Yep.
In the true sense, the enlightened ones.
And Ion's all for that. That's a politically correct, that's a spiritually correct statement, Raylan. Ion supports that.
Good.
And always remember, there is great love for you here, and we are complete.
And that's what people forget. They forget that God loves them. And they are loved.
I don't know. JW may be there, maybe not. Ion ends its session with the phrase, we are complete, whereas Abraham used to say, we are eternally incomplete. Ion says, we are complete. Maybe JW would like to say hello in the last few seconds.
Yes, hello. It's been great fun. Great fun interacting.
Well, thank you, JW. Thank you for acting as a host for Ion. I know that all of my listeners truly appreciated it. And
it is our great pleasure.
You can hear the music. I just can't thank all three of you enough for being here with me. Excuse me, all four of you enough for being here with me. And next week, I think, I can't remember who I've got on next Monday. But please tune in. I know it's going to be fascinating.
Thank you.
Have a safe and wonderful weekend, everyone.